So far then, each one gave his opinion as to how we know that the Book of Esther was written, the Ruach HaKodesh, right? They were all in agreement it was written. But the proof that they gave, you know, each one had a different proof. Okay. So now, okay, we find that, you know, according to Shmuel, remember, what did Shmuel say? He said, my argument is better than everybody else's, right? So now along comes Rava in order to support, more or less, the opinion of Shmuel. Omar Rava, you find the place over there. It's the second line above the last long line over there, okay? Omar Rava, Rava said, "Nechguhu islehu pirka." He says, you know what? I can find an answer to knock down, literally, the previous proofs that were given, Levar ben Shmuel, except for the opinion that was expressed by Shmuel, that less lay pirka, because his argument has nothing to refute. You cannot refute his argument. The Rabbi Eliezer, all right, remember, what did Rabbi Eliezer say? So Eliezer said, right? Haman said in his heart. Now, what was the incident at that time? The incident was, if you remember, he comes into the royal courtyard, right? And the king says to him, tell me, what should be done to the man who the king desires to honor, right? All right. So it's written over there. So Haman said to himself, who would the king want to honor other than myself, right? Right. So, if that's the case, he says, all right, that opinion, he says, Savorahu, all right, that was only an opinion. And what was the opinion of the, you know, the Haman? He says, says, you know, Haman figured to himself, there was no other person who was as important to the king as he himself. So it's a natural thing for Haman to say, huh? Haman, who shall I honor? So he says, yeah, the king wants to honor me, you know, I'm the guest of honor at his banquet, okay? V'hai kimafi shetuva, and that whole business, you know, where he goes into all the details, in other words, let them bring a royal garment, let him put it on the king's horse, let him put a crown that the king had used upon his head, you know, this, you know, all that he says, so this, he said, this is all his own opinion, you know, he's thinking about these things. So we can see that this obviously had to be in his mind. Okay. The Rabbi Akiva, all right, now what does Rabbi Akiva say? Rabbi Akiva said, right, that Esther found favor in the eyes of all who beheld her. Now, again, Robert saying, you know, we don't need Ruach HaKodesh for that, because we can find a logical reason. Why? Yeah. Dilmoke Rabbi Yamosa. He says, maybe this is in accordance with an opinion that was given by Rabbi Yamosa, the Omar, who said, Melamed Shekol Echod V'Echod Nidmesalo Kumosei. There's a statement that we'll find again that will be repeated a little bit later on, where we go in, we're going to discover that, that they're going to take the text of the Megillah and then tell you all kinds of agadas in connection with that. So, in connection with this incident, we find the opinion of Rabbi Lasser, who says, you know why everybody liked Esther? Because everybody thought that Esther was a native of their own country. Remember, Achashverosh made a party for princes and satraps and people from 127 provinces, right? So, when a person saw Esther, he figured, oh, she's a good Persian girl. Another one said, oh, she's a good, let's say, a good Greek girl. Another one saw and says, oh, she's a good Ethiopian. Another one says she's a good Indian girl. And stuff like that. You understand? So each one felt, you know, hey, I feel so honored that he decided to choose a girl who came from our people. Okay? So she found favor in the eyes of everybody because they all figured that whoever Esther was, she had to be one of their landslides. Okay.
So I have another question about that. Yeah. Esther is supposed to have written. Esther wrote this book.
Yes.
Right. Esther wrote that Esther found favor in the eyes of all around her.
Yeah, but how did she know that if it weren't through the Ruach HaKodesh? You understand?
Well, that's what one
that, that's what. But okay.
It also be
so that's the opinion, though. That, that Rabbi Akiva, right? Yeah.
If you know whether people like you or don't like you. I mean, this is a sort of a human element.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? If you're
but
in a group
when you
of
have
people,
a population that extends over 127 different provinces, how so do taking, you know that?
Oh, right. So they're taking that literally. They all, in all, they're taking it literally.
Correct. All right, so that's the reason why Rabbi Akiva said what he did, but as we see, it's refuted by Rabbi over here, who says, listen, it's a logical assumption because everyone thought that she was their landsman, okay? Landsfrau, okay, I'll be more technical.
Landsperson.
Landsperson, right.
Landsqueen.
Okay. Oh, the Rabbi Meir, okay, what does Rabbi Meir say? Rabbi Meir said, right, Shanimar, by Yevoda Hadovah Mordechai, okay? How did Mordechai find out about the conspiracy to assassinate King Ahasuerus? Okay? So he says, okay, you know, I can give you a logical reason, you know, why he found out, right? So he says, the Horde Rabbi Meir, he says, Duma ki Rabbi Chiya bar Abba. Maybe his opinion coincides with the opinion of Rabbi Chiya bar Abba. The Omar, who said, Dikson v'serish, you know, those two chamberlains, Shnei Tarshiyim Hoyim. They were, both of them, people who came from some country, Tarshish or something like that. I don't know whether it's Tarshish or Asia Minor. It could be, you know.
Tarshish, right.
Later on, people identified Tarshish with Spain. But actually, there was a Tarshish in Asia Minor, too. Okay? So, you know, they were both landslide, same country. And what happened? And so, you know what they were doing? They were talking in Tarshish language. All right. But what they didn't know, right, that Mordechai could understand that language. So he knew what they were talking about. Okay. Yeah. How do we know they spoke 70 languages? Because we learned from another place that to be a member of the Sanhedrin, you had to be, you had to understand 70 different languages so that you could take testimony from anybody who comes before you, and you without having to have an interpreter, because an interpreter, maybe you will change it. All right. Whereas in this particular case, maybe. Yeah. Okay. So, the Horde Rabbi Yosef ben Damascus, and how about him? So he was the one who said, we know because it's written about Bezal Leshochus Yodom, right, that they did not take any of the spoils, any of the booty, right, any of the property. So he says, well, how do we know that the Jews didn't take any? Maybe they did. No, he says, because Dilma Pristike Shoda. Because maybe, you know, what did Mordechai do? And Esther, they sent messengers all over in order to ascertain whether Jews had taken any of the spoil, and they didn't. Okay. Now, the Shmuel, however, on the other hand, Vadei Leistei Pircha. No question that you cannot find a refutation for his statement, which says, what? Tiyamu Lamala, in other words, whatever that the heavenly court was willing to affirm and to confirm, Ma Shekiblu Lamata, what the Bezdin down below on earth had done. So Omar Rabbi, you know, so Rabina says, you know what? He says, this reminds me of a popular saying. What is it? Haina Damar Yinshe, this is what people say when you know, they give it, in other words, it's a folk expression, a folk marshal, as we would say. It's you know,
colloquial.
Yeah, colloquial expression, I mean, okay. A folk proverb. Okay. Yeah. What did they say? They said, Tava chada pilpalta charifta memale tzade kare, which would mean that it's better to have just one very sharp pepper than a basket which would be full of gourds. Okay? Meaning what? the pepper has much more pungency, right, than a whole basket that's full of squash and things like that. Okay. So in other words, his statement really is the pungent statement. Okay, that clinches it. Okay. Rav Yosef of Mehocha. Rav Yosef found a different reason to support, you know, the fact that it was written in Ruach HaKodesh. Why? Because it's written in the Yemei HaPurim Ba'ele Lo Yavru B'toch HaYehudim. These days of Purim will never disappear from among the Jews. Okay? Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak Omer Mehocha. Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak is not happy with that part, because we'll see in a second, right? But he prefers rather the Zichram Lo Yosef Mizarim, that the memory will never disappear from their descendants. Why did he disagree with the first part of the Pasuk? Right, Yimei HaPurim Lo Yavru B'toch HaYehudim, because he says this may mean only that in the age where the miracle of Purim took place, in Shushan HaBira and so on, over there where they saw it, so okay, so that memory would not disappear from them. But the Zichron HaYosef Mizarim, the fact that Jews throughout the generations would remember, this proves that the Book of Esther was written how? The Ruach HaKodesh. Okay. Alright, we have time to do a little bit more over here. Okay. Now, the Mishnah had mentioned, that would be on the previous page, which you don't have over here at the moment, but let me just refresh your memory. We learned on the previous page, the Mishnah says that Koras HaMegillah B'Adar Rishon and Sabra HaShana, right, what happened if they read the Megillah in the first Ador, and then it became a Nibayar. So, what is the ruling then? So, the Mishnah says, Koranos HaBadar Sheni, and they have to read it between, they have to read it again in Adar Sheni. Okay? Now, we went into a whole discussion last week as to what the priority should be and things like that. Of course, as I also explained, you know, that today it's not a pertinent question simply because our calendar is fixed and we don't go on the basis of seeing when the moon is and seeing whether it looks like winter or doesn't look like spring or anything like that, so that, you know, we would know whether to make it a Nibayor or not. Okay? We don't go on that basis. But then the rest of the Mishnah over there said that Ein Bein Adar HaRishon Adar Sheni, the only difference between first Adar and second Adar, Ela Kriyas HaMegillah Matos LeMegillah, right? The reading of the Megillah, in other words, it should be done in second Adar then, according to the Mishnah, right? And also, tied in with it is Matos LeMegillah, gifts that you have to give to the poor. Why gifts that we have to give to the poor? So that we learned previously already, you know, that the eyes literally of the poor people, they're looking eagerly for the reading of the Megillah because they know that they're going to get money. They're going to get, you know, people will give them matonis. Okay. So, they quote it over here, but now as we'll see, they go on instead to another of the important features of Purim, and that is what we call Mishloach Manos, or people call it Shalach Manos, but the text itself in the Megillah, it says Mishloach Manos Ishtarayim, that we are to send gifts of food one person to another. Okay? Alright.
What are the basis for that?
The Megillah says so. Well, to make it more festive. That's it. You know, we have different things. Remember, we've already mentioned the reading of the Megillah. We've already mentioned gifts to the poor. We now mention Matonis Mishloach Manos, right? In order to add to festivity, and one other thing that we mentioned, and that is Yom Mishnah V'Simcha. It's a day in which we're expected to eat and drink, you know, and feast and celebrate,
that
because it's a Yom Tov, right?
That's in the Book of Esther.
It's all in the Book of Esther, right? Right. Okay. All these things are mentioned over there. Okay, so now they go to the business of Shalach Manos, or Mishloach Manos. All right. Tani Rav Yosef. Rav Yosef taught as follows, to say, Mishloach Manos Ishrayehu, inasmuch as the text says that gifts of food have to be sent from one person to another, And notice that the word is monos. Monos is plural because the singular is mono. Mm-hmm. Okay?
Mm-hmm. So it
so says, right, so shtei monos l'yishechad. In other words, the minimum of monos of food that you have to send are two items. Of course, when we say two items, it doesn't mean, for example, two apples, two oranges. What it means is two different types of
items. Oh, I thought it meant for two people.
No.
Not yet.
And it's l'ish echad. The minimum is to send it to at least one person, two different types of food.
Uh-huh.
That's the minimum. Naturally, it's more simple if you send it to more people, you understand?
Uh-huh.
But to fulfill the mitzvah, mishlach monos, you have to send at least to one person, two different types of food.
Right.
Okay? Umatonos le'evyonim, and how about gifts to the poor? Because that again, matonos is written in the plural, and avyonim is also written in the plural. You see, in the other one, ish l'reyehu, right? So ish is what? Ish by itself is singular. Okay, although that's really not what it means, but you know, if you're going to take a look at these fine points in the language, so ish is singular, whereas the matonos and avyonim are both plural. So therefore, he says on that basis, Rav Yosef says that he says shtei matonos shnei b'nei odom. You have to send two gifts to two poor people.
Mm-hmm.
Now it doesn't mean that you have to. It's a question. Does it mean that each one gets two gifts from you or not? But in reality, that's not it. What you have to do is to give at least to two different people a gift of money. Okay.
Does it say
the
poor people?
Yeah, matonos le'avyonim. And Evyon is a poor person.
Evyon.
Yes. Yeah, an Evyon. You never heard the expression.
Well, where do you find a poor person?
This is the new problem that we have. We are members of the affluent society over here. But believe me, in Eretz Yisrael you find plenty of poor people. In Europe they have plenty of poor people.
Well,
and
that's
so,
and
even in America.
Many of poor people in Springfield.
What are the poor people do to fulfill the mitzvah, that same mitzvah?
What the poor people do? They should exchange. They should also give. Because they also have the obligation to give.
Plenty of poor here.
Okay. You have money, you give more generously. But if you give even a penny or something like that, you know, technically, as far as gifts are concerned,
you give money to the
poor person, then in that particular case, they can buy whatever they need.
That's not the same as
Shalom,
that's the charity part.
It's just the charity part, right. That's Matan is the union, right.
So that's why we have the baskets and Shalom.
That is correct. Therefore, we have Matonis of Yoinim, right?
Yeah.
And of course, what we do these days, since the question was asked, we have funds that we give, money to.
Yeah.
Now, I'll tell you, there are organizations that advertise in the Jewish press prior to Purim, where they say, send your money to us, and we will already distribute for you, to poor people. It's all right. If it's a legitimate organization, I feel you can take a chance. You're risking your life on it.
No.
But doesn't that money go into what we call the rabbi's discretionary fund here?
There is over here a discretionary fund.
Yeah,
correct. Right.
And
just as
for the purpose of distributing.
Right. Just as we have a different fund, that we have, kipcha de pischa. In other words, what we call, the money that we use for moschitim. Before Pesach, and again it's in order to enable poor people to be able to celebrate Pesach, so we buy matzah, we give them the money to buy this, right. Alright, so as we see from this second line from the bottom then, that the mitzvah of Mishlach Banos is to send at least two different types of foods to one person. With that you fulfill it, but it doesn't mean you should stop at that point. And the same thing with Matonos le'avyonim, at least one gift of money to two different poor people. But again, you can certainly give them more than that, okay?
You're supposed to give it to your friend, not to a stranger. Huh?
No, a stranger is better.
No, that has nothing to do with the Matonos le'avyonim. Mishloach monos, normally we send it to the friends, Because first of all, take a look again, Ishlu Reyehu, the word Reyehu, right? I translated one person to another. But the word Reya in Hebrew can also mean a friend. So Ishlu Reyehu means that you send to each friend. obviously, you're going to send to people with whom you are friends. Not going to send one is to somebody whom you don't know.
A party, extending your party to friends. That's the whole point, the celebration.
Yeah, but as I say, the whole thing is to increase the celebration, of course. Make it an outstanding event, and, you know, so you'd be able, you and all the people with whom you come in contact, will be able to feel the joy of Purim. Okay. Rabbi Yehuda Nasiyo, Rabbi Yehuda, who was at one time the Nasi of Israel, he would be a descendant, a later descendant of Rabbi Yehuda, you know, the original, whom we call Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi. This is Rabbi Yehuda Nasiyo, in order to distinguish between the two. So, Shonaleh the Rabbi Yoshaya, Atmo de Iglo Tilto, the Gav de Cham. Okay? He sent to Rabbi Yoshaya Atmo de Iglo Tilto. Now, an Iglo Tilto is a question of the Gemara, what exactly does it mean? But one translation they give is that this is a 3-year old calf. And it's supposed to be particularly tender and juicy and so on and so forth. So he sent him an Atma. An Atma in this case is the Yorech. In other words, a leg of it, okay. Sent him a leg of lamb, okay? Except it's a leg of calf, okay? All right. And also he sent them a barrel of wine. This is a gan spy, okay? So Sholach Leh, so Rabbi Yishai, who happened to be a poor man, wrote him back an answer, and he sent them the following statement. And with this, we need the next page.
Is it
here? This is it, right?
Like the first one.
By the way, anybody who wants to keep these, I have, you know, all these different pages. If you want to assemble them and study them in the week, by all means.
Pass the new page.
The new page. The new page over here.
Right here. Oh, I got that. Yes, we are now on the very top of Daf Zayin Omid Beis, right? Okay. So, Rabbi Yoshaya sent back a thank you note to Rabbi Yehuda Nasiyo, okay? And what was his thank you note? He says, Kiyamta Bono Rabbeinu, you know, oh Master, you have fulfilled for us, or, you know, in other words, by your gift that you sent us, you know, the wine and the joint of calf meat and so on, says, you fulfilled both Mishloach Bono Sishtereyehu, in other words, sending gifts of food one to another, and also Matodas Levyonim, because since I'm a poor man, so this is a wonderful gift for me too. Okay. Rabbo Shadalei Lamori Barmar. Rabbo sent Shalach Monas to Mori, the son of Mar. And who did he send it? He sent it Biyad Abaye. He sent it literally by the hand of Abaye. In other words, Abaye was his, what we would say, he was his shaliach, okay, to deliver the shalach monas. And what did he send him? He sent to him male tasko de kaswa, or male kasa kimcha de apshuna. Alright, the question is, what are these things? So Rashi says tasko de kaswa, he says sak Mole tomorrow. In other words, he sent them a whole bag that was filled with dates. Okay?
Tasko is what?
Tasko is a bag.
A bag?
A bag.
Or a basket, a bag.
You translate a tisko to tasko. Okay.
Tasha is a purse of some sort.
No, that's Yiddish.
Oh, okay.
That's Yiddish. This is Aramaic. No. Tash is a German word, which means literally a pocket.
A pocket.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Okay.
Tasko is a
bag. Yeah, this is the way Rashi understands it, a bag, a sock, right? Okay, you have a basket over there in your translation. So it's not a basket. But at any rate, it was filled with dates. And what is the other thing? The Malikasa Kimchod Avshuna, and it was filled also with the flower of Avshuna. So he says, Sinishbayashu Hachitim Batadur. I'm quoting the Rashi right now, in the third line over there. He says, they took the wheat, they dried it in an oven, right? The Odin Kamel, while it was still nice and fresh, right? The Kimach Shelahen Mosek Liyelam. And their flour is very, very sweet. In other words, he made like a sort of popcorn. That he said, right. Yeah. Sort of like a popcorn. He roasted the wheat, okay? And yeah. So, okay.
Cereal. Yeah, right. It's like
yeah. Like roasted wheat, which was very sweet tasting.
Sugar pops. Okay. Cheerios.
Right. Right. So, Omale Abaye, so Abaye said to him, Hashta Omar Mori, right? So, now, you know what Mori said? He says, Ichaklo Malko Leve de Kula Mitzavre Ilo Nochis. He says, you know, if the king was at one time a farmer, then you know what? His basket that he normally carries around his neck, it never leaves him. In other words, you know, the way you are to begin with, you never changed. Even though now, what? Now you're a Rosh Hashiva, right? But nevertheless, what do? You're still giving out baskets of fruit or something like that and so on, you know, and and not only that, but you're giving the kind of stuff, as Rashi says, obviously, the kind of stuff that you might feed a behemoth. But, you know, you should give something, in other words, now that you're a Rosh Hashiva, you should give something more kosher.
It wasn't worthy.
Right. You should give something more kosher, okay?
Yeah,
the Rabba sent it to Mori, okay? So this is Mori, Mori is making the statement, okay.
Well, Mori's got a nice guy because he doesn't appreciate a gift.
So what happened? So Hodor Shorolei, Ihu, Moletatsko de Zanvilo, Moletkosim Pilpul. So you know what? So the next time around, you know what he sent him? He sent him a bag which was full of Zanvilo. Zanvilo is, even in modern Hebrew, they still use it. In the sense of ginger, okay?
Well, spices.
Right. And cup which was filled with pepper. Pilpalta arika. Long peppers, okay?
Oh, that's okay.
Long peppers. So Amar Abayis, Abayis said, this time he says, Hashta, Omar, Anu Shadre Lei Chulia, Viyu Shadali Chorpa. So again, you know, Mori is not that happy. Because he says, I sent to him something which was sweet, and he sends me back something which is sharp. Okay? So, Omar Abaye. So, obviously, Abaye is not, you know, he's reporting that not everybody was happy with what? With the Shalach Banas that was sent. Omar Abaye. So, Abaye said, Kinafki Mebeimar, right? You know what? When I would leave the house of Mar, I want you to know that Hava Savana, right? I was absolutely filled when I would leave Mar's house. Ben Kimate Lahasam, but when I came to the next place, you know what? Karivuli Shisin Soy de Shisin Mine Katera, they gave me 60 platters of 60 different foods that were cooked. The Achli Behul, and I ate from them Shisin Pluge, Uvi Shuna Basraisa, Hava Karar. Yeah. So he says, yeah. So I ate from them 60 portions, right? And the last thing that they cooked, the Shuna Basraisa, all right? In other words, and the last food that I ate, so to speak, like the dessert that I ate, Hava correlates me kador. You know what they called it? They called it something which had been roasted in a pot. In other words, they made me pot roast. Okay.
For dessert.
Right. And then he says, Uvoi, and I want that, he says, Mnichas Tzua Basra. I was so hungry yet after eating all the food that I wanted to eat the plate.
Yeah, he was so full of the floor. How come all of a sudden?
Because, in other words, this new food that he had was so tempting and so delicious that it gave me more appetite to eat, right? So Amar Abaye, says, you know, after relating this, he says, Haine Damar Yinshe, this is what people say, you know, again, he's quoting a popular expression. Yes, Kafin Anya Velo Yoda, that a poor person is full and he doesn't even know that he's full. In other words, he still wants to eat more. And I'll close with the next statement. Iname, likewise, is another expression that, incidentally, this next expression has become very, very famous. It's Ravcho Levesimo Shechiach, which means, for Vesimo, something which is yummy, Ravcho, there's always space, Shechiach, to be found. When you have something delicious to eat, you can always find a space to eat. Okay. Okay. Tonight is what, the 21st already? 22nd. I'm telling you, I don't know. Okay. The 22nd. Yeah, I'll tell you where we are. We are continuing tonight. Megillah, Daf Zayin, Omid Veiz. And we are roughly about 15 lines down. Okay?
You can see the right hand side, yeah, the Hananan, right. A couple of lines further down.
Where yeah. Okay. I don't know if you see over there. Yeah.
Anshei Kafin or something?
Yeah. Yeah. We're up to where it says Abaye Bar Rabin. Okay, do you see that over there?
No, I don't.
All right, I'll count. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16. I told you about 15. It's on the 16th line. Okay, 16th line on the page. Okay? All right. I just want to remind you from what we heard the last few minutes, again reviewing the last minutes of last week, that we were talking about mitzvos of Purim, all right? We already have covered the mitzvah of reading the Megillah. That was a big discussion, remember, as to how many different days we could read it and so on, but we finally came to the conclusion that if you're in Yerushalayim or a walled city, if you happen to be in Shushan, I don't know who lives in Shushan these days, so in that case you read it on the 15th, everywhere else they read it on the 14th of Adar. And then of course we had a discussion based on the Mishnah, you know, Ein Bein Adarishal Bein Yishayin and La Adarshayin. In other words, there, what is the difference between first Adar and second Adar? And we saw a whole discussion about that, but of course the final conclusion is that even if in the days, let's say, when they were still figuring out whether to declare it a leap year on the basis of observation, and therefore the Sanhedrin declared that we now had a second Adar, even if they had read it in first Adar, then they still have to read it in second Adar, and that led to the discussion, which is where is the greater mitzvah? There's a difference of opinion, but nevertheless, the prevailing opinion is the second Adar. Why? Because they quote, I mean, the fact, not only on basis of, you know, trying to figure it out on the basis of the verse where it says, Segeris Hapurim Hashenis, second, in other words, he looks for support for the word Hashenis, meaning that shows that has to be the second Adar. But they also had another statement, if you remember, that Kedei Lemismach, you know, in order to have one next to the other, have one gulula next to the other gulula. The first gulula, of course, would be the one in Ador, which would be the one of Purim, and then, of course, the even more important gulula would be, of course, the redemption from Egypt. So those were the reasons. All right. So therefore, we learned about reading in the Megillah. Not finished yet with it, because there'll be other dinim that we're going to discuss about the reading from the Megillah. But for the time being, we put that aside. Okay? Then, inasmuch as they felt that the reading of the Megillah also means that this is a time that the poor people are looking forward in order to get matonos, so that therefore we have the mitzvah of matonos le'avyodim. And whatever day the Megillah is going to be read, This is the day upon which the poor people expect to get matanas, okay? Then we had last week the business about the fact that you have to have a suda for it, okay? Okay, now if you have to have a suda on Purim, so this is what we were discussing, you know, what is it? So remember, first of all, there's the suda. We haven't quite finished the suda yet. But in addition, it's also the mitzvah of Mishloach Mados. And there we saw that on the basis of what's the singular, what's the plural, and so on, so we come to the conclusion, and this is of course the accepted halacha, that when it comes to giving charity, matonas avyonim, you have to give one matana to two different avyonim, okay? But when it comes to Mishloach Mados, you have to give two different types of food, right? But to one person, and with that you would fulfill the mitzvah, okay? So now we continue to finish up this business about the Purim Suda, okay? All right. First of all, we learn as follows. Abaye Barovin, Rabbi Hanina Barovin, okay? Notice that they had the same father, right? They're probably brothers, I would say, all right? At any rate, the Chalfis who decides on the Hadodi, what did they do? They would exchange their Purim Sudas with each other. This would seem to be the shot, okay? Some have a different understanding. They say, you know, that it means only that the two of them would eat together Purim Suda. But it makes more sense to me to extend, you know, based upon the language, that this is what they did. One would exchange, you know, he would send his Purim Suda to the other one's house, and the other one would send him. All right, so that way they fulfilled Mishloach Mados. Okay? Yeah. So Amar Rava, now along comes Rava, and he makes another statement. And this statement, I have to tell you, is famous and also a cause of problems. Omar Rava, Rava said as follows. He says, Mechaye inish tevesume bepuria. Person has to get so intoxicated on Purim, adelo yoda, so that, and to the point where he doesn't know how to distinguish bein oror hamon, the Baruch Mordechai, between cursed be Haman and blessed be Mordechai. Okay. Of course, you know, I mean, we have a little prayer that we say after the reading of the Megillah, which is called Shoshanas Yaakov, if you remember. And after we say how happy the people were to see, you know, the salvation come, then it's written, Oror Hamon, Hashem Bikesh Le'adi, right? Cursed be Haman, who wanted to destroy me. Boruch Mordechai HaYehudi, blessed be Mordechai the Jew. Then Arura Zeresh, right? Cursed be Zeresh, the wife of the person who caused so much dread to fall upon me. And Brucha Esther, blessed be Esther Badi, for my sake, or according to another version, Megina Badi, the one who protected me, you know, who shielded me. Okay? So, you're supposed to get so soused on Purim that you don't know the difference between, are you saying Baruch Mordechai or are you saying Or Haman? That's how intoxicated you have to be. All right. Now, of course, I don't have to tell you that there are many who take this very, very literally.
Yes.
And I've seen plenty of yeshiva bachers who go around and they imbibe in one house after another. And, you know, they make pigs of themselves. Loyolainu. And I hope that somebody is there to drive them safely, because certainly there are no particular conditions to drive. Lately, there has been a movement to tell people that all it means is drink a little bit more than you normally would drink, just for the sake of celebrating the festival, but not to the extent that you become soused and make a pig of yourself. And, you know, people get sick, they throw up, and so on. I don't have to tell you what happens. Anybody who's ever experienced intoxication or seen somebody who's intoxicated, I mean, they know what could be the result of it. Okay. Now, as a result of this intoxication, we're going to learn another little story pretty soon. Okay, and here it comes. Okay. It's written, Rabba of Rabbi Zeira, Rabba and Rabbi Zeira. Rabba, of course, was the head of the yeshiva. Rabbi Zeira was his, you know, his compatriot, his colleague. All right. So anyway, Ovdu Suras Purim b'Hadol Yadoni. Here it means definitely that they made a Purim Suda together, okay? So they were celebrating with a good Suda, and Ipsum, and what happened? They became drunk, they became intoxicated. Come Rabbah, so Rabbah got up and shocked Rabbi Zera. You know what he did? He killed him.
Oh,
killed him, he stabbed him. He didn't know what he was doing. He said, okay. Lamachar, the next day, when he discovered that, I mean, that Rabbi Zera, you know, is lying dead over there, so boy, Rachbe, so Rabbah prayed, and as a result of his prayers, Rabbi Zera came back to life again. Okay.
I wonder what kind of prayers they were.
Well, maybe it was in a coma. I mean, I don't know how to explain it literally, okay? But the punchline is coming. Punchline is coming. Okay. Didn't have it yet, okay? All right. So at any rate, Lashana, which means in the following year, Omale. So, you know what Rabbi said to Rabbi Zera? He said, hey, Nesei Mar, why don't you come over to my house and we'll make the Purim Suda together? So, so Rabbi Zera says to him, you know, miracles don't happen all the time.
He doesn't want to press his luck.
That's right, he's not pressing his luck. Okay.
Right.
All right. Now we come to a serious halacha as far as the Purim Suda is concerned. Omar Rav. Rav said as follows. He says, Sarudas Purim Sha'achola Balayla. The Purim Suda, if a person ate it at night, in other words, the night of Purim, Lo yotzo yedoichei vatzo. He has not fulfilled the mitzvah of eating a Purim Suda. In other words, when do you fulfill it? You have to fulfill it during the day of Purim, not during the night.
The night before, though.
Yeah, you know, Purim night.
Because
in the
Purim
sense,
will be over if you have tomorrow.
No. On the contrary, what he means is, all right, let's say that Purim is celebrated Monday night and Tuesday. All right, just say, for example.
So Monday night.
So it means, right, Monday night, the night that we read the Megillah in the shul, and you have a party to eat after that, you're not fulfilling the mitzvah of Sudas Purim by eating the food at that time. I mean, look, we in Kadima, you know, we like to see an Eilim come, and we celebrate, and then after, I mean, particularly some of us may have been fasting during the day, also Titus Esther, right? So, you know what we do after the reading of the Megillah, we have a little party, we have the pizza bagels, we have the cake, we have other things and so on, you know, that we eat, okay? Right, and then the masquerade and so on. I mean, this is all fine, this is beautiful, this is all to enjoy Purim. But we have not actually fulfilled the mitzvah of a Purim Suda with that particular meal. You still have to have a Purim Suda the following day, the day of Purim itself, okay? And this is talking the din. That this is the way. So, I mean, a lot of people, you know, think that Purim is only at night, and they forget that in the day there are mitzvahs that are connected with Purim too. You have to hear the Megillah again. Matter of fact, there's a difference of opinion as to whether which is the more important reading. Is it the one at night, or is it during the day? And the answer is actually that during the day is considered even more important, but we didn't come to that as yet. I mean, I'm just letting you know in advance right now. And likewise, the other things too, like Shalach Manas, you know, people figure, all right, look, you have an Eilim coming here at night, so what do they do? So they give Shalach Manas to each other at night. It's very nice, but you have not really fulfilled the mitzvah of Shalach Manas unless you do it during the day. And the same thing is true. I mean, all right, Matonasav Yodim, I imagine you can fulfill by collecting money at night and then distributing it during the day, you know, to poor people and so on. Okay. But the important point is that the day of Purim itself requires celebration on our part, and not just the night, you know, which precedes it, the night of Purim. Okay? Yes.
Has it always been done, like in those days, was it being done at night and in the daytime, or is the nighttime reading something that happened in modern times?
No. This goes
always,
right back.
It goes back
to those days. Absolutely
also.
Right. I mean, it's a tradition of more than 1,000 years, so sure.
Oh, that's what I'm asking.
Oh, excuse me, more than 2,000 years.
As a matter of fact,
what
the tradition was, you read in the
Bible. Right.
You were still fasting, and then you ate afterwards.
But there's no question. I mean, more than 2,000 years.
Yeah, so
we've had to read both at night and during the day.
It's an accommodation to current times.
Right.
No, modern times.
No,
so whether it
no,
came from the original...
Okay. So this is what Rava is saying then, that you have not fulfilled it unless you also eat the Suda. You know, you have to eat the Suda during the day. My Tama, he says, and what's the reason? He says, because it's written in the Megillah, Yimei Mishneh V'Simcha Ksiv. It's written over there that it has to be literally that they should be days of drink. Right. Rav Ashi Hava Yosef Kamei the Rav Kano, or according to others, is somebody else who was in front of the Amemor. Okay. Rav Ashi was sitting there in the yeshiva in the presence of either Rav Kano or Amemor, take your pick. Okay. Noga. So, at any rate, it became dark, because this was when, this is in Purim day, you have to understand, in Purim day. And it got dark, and yet the rabbis were not there in order to attend the shir that he was giving. So, Omalei, so Rav Ashi said to the other man, he said to him, "Why Tamal Yosef Rabbanan? Tell me, for what reason haven't the sages come in over here?" So, Dilma Teride Besudas Purim. All right? The answer that he got is, well, maybe they're busy at home doing what?
Preparing.
No. Eating the Purim Suda. Okay. So, Omalei, so he said unto him, couldn't they have eaten it last night? In other words, you see, you know, again, maybe they could have eaten last night and fulfilled the mitzvah at that time. So, Omalei, so he answered him, he said, Lo shemi'a le'lamar, haven't you heard, O Master, called the Omar Rava, that what Rava had said, namely, that Suudas Purim sha'chola ba'lai lo yotzi de'chivase, that a Purim Suda which you ate at night, with this you have not fulfilled the obligation. Omalei, so he said to him, Omar Rava Hachi, is this talking what Rava said? Omalei, he said, yes, yeah. So, okay, so Tanamine, Arboim Zimnim, so he studied it 40 times, he went over and over and over this halacha, the Domilei came on the Malach Bechisei. At that point, whether he'd gone over it 40 different times, then it was as if he had money in the bank. In other words, now he knew this halacha. Okay, that you do not fulfill the Purim Suda except during the day. Okay. All right. Now, at this particular point, we have a series of Mishnayos with commentary made by the Gemara, which in reality have nothing to do with the subject of Purim per se. Okay? We'll see. But, of course, you want to know why does it follow over here? So right. It follows on the previous Mishnah. Previous Mishnah, if you remember, spoke about Ein Bein. There is no difference between Adar Rishon and Adar Sheni except for. So now we're going to have a whole series of various dinim dealing with all kinds of subject matter where we're going to learn that there is no difference between this and this except for. Okay?
Except what?
Except for. Except for, and then they're going to mention what is the exception? Okay. I know I'm not supposed to end a sentence with a preposition. Aber von das wegen in the neck.
Well, there isn't an end. You got a colon.
Except for
right.
A, B, C, D.
Right. Exactly.
Okay. So the first one is a very important halach. Says Ein Bein Shabbos LeYom HaKippur. Excuse me, I skipped. Ein Bein Yom Tov LeShabbos Elo Eichel Nefesh Bilvad. There is no difference as far as how we observe Shabbos or Yom Tov, with one exception. What is that exception? That exception is what we need for the preparation of food. Okay. As you know, I mean, this is of course going to be brought out now in the Gemara's discussion. We know that. If we take a look at in Parsha Bo, Sefer Shmos, okay, where they deal with the laws of Pesach. But as Moshe Rabbeinu was told, you know, first of all, you know, HaKodesh HaZeh Lachem, Rosh Chodeshim, right? This month is to be the very first of the months of the year. Of course, we had a whole discussion in Rosh Hashanah when we learned it, you know, about that. And then, after that, he tells the people of Israel to prepare for Pesach, right? And he tells them that on the first day, on the seventh day of Yontev, they're not allowed to do any malacha, right? Not allowed to do any labor. Ach asher yeyachel l'chol nefesh, except for that which has to be eaten by a human being, hu levado yeyaseh lachem. That alone may be done by you. So from this we learn what? We learn that on a day, on a Yontev day, which is not Shabbos, we are on that day permitted to cook food. Okay? We are permitted to prepare food, to cook food, you know, cooking specifically. Okay.
What about the din on carrying? That's
another. Okay. You ask a very good question. It's not mentioned over here, but nevertheless, I mean, Gemara, you know, Bayer, Beitz, you know, they discuss that. At any rate, inasmuch, the principle over there is Gaven Shehutar Letzorach, Hutar Shelo Letzorach, which means that inasmuch as permission was given for the immediate preparation of food, so permission was also given for those things which would be necessary indirectly for the preparation of food. Okay? So, in that, therefore, that includes carrying from one place to another, because obviously, let's say you have to bring food from here to there or something like that and so on. Now, if you're permitted to bring food from one place to another, you're also already allowed to take a baby carriage, for example, and take a child, you know, in the baby carriage and wheel it over there and so on. Okay? So that's why on Yontif we are much more lenient about it. But what about, for example, electricity? We don't use, I mean, you know, we don't light electricity on Shabbos. Are we permitted to light electricity on Yontif? No. Same rule would apply. Just as you prepare whatever lights you need, or if you have a time clock, you prepare that, you know, for whatever you need on Shabbos, the same thing would hold true as far as Yontif is concerned.
Except. On Shabbos, you cannot make a light from another light. On Yontif, if you have a light, you can make a light.
Well, all right, that's already going into the minutiae, okay.
Yeah.
Right, that's going into the minutiae.
What
does
that mean? That you're not really making electricity when the light's going in, you're taking some electricity and moving it around.
Yeah, we understand. I mean, the electricity is a problem from the point of view of halacha, depending upon who you follow. But I'm talking about those of us, you know, we're very strict about not to use electricity, okay? Except, you know, as I say, either through a time clock or you set lights that will go all Shabbos or Yontif and so on and so forth, okay? All right, so as I say, that's the exception. But let's say if you don't answer a telephone on Shabbos, you don't answer a telephone on Yontif, okay? You don't go to work on Shabbos, you don't go to work on Yontif. So that, in other words, this is the only difference between Shabbos and Yontif, namely the preparation of food to be eaten and whatever that will entail.
You mentioned carrying. That doesn't apply to you.
No, it doesn't apply to Yom Kippur, because Yom Kippur is called Shabbat. It's the Sabbath of Sabbaths, okay? Yeah, but talking about a Yontif on a weekday, and definitely I don't mean in Yom Kippur, because that's called the Sabbath of Sabbaths, Shabbat, okay? All right, so the Gemara discusses this Mishnah. It says, however, when it comes to those things which are indirectly necessary preparations for the cooking, the actual cooking, so in either case the same rule would apply, namely that you're not allowed to prepare it. Now, Masnissen, so therefore they immediately jump in and they say this statement that you just quoted, Masnissen over here means a Beraisa. Beraisa they just quoted, it says, Lot Rabbi Yehuda. This doesn't follow the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda. The Tanya, because what did Rabbi Yehuda learn? Rabbi Yehuda learned Ein Ben Yom Tov L'Shabbos Elo Eichel Nefesh, right? You know, the same the Mishnah. How did he interpret it? That there's no difference between Yom Tov and Shabbos except when it came to preparation of food for human consumption. And Rabbi Yehuda Mater Af Machshiri Eichel Nefesh. Whereas Rabbi Yehuda permits even those things that are indirectly necessary to prepare the food. My Tama or the Tanakama. So what is the reason of the first authority, the one that was quoted in Baraisa? So he says, Omar Kro, he based it upon the fact that it says, who? It, meaning what? Just the actual food that you have in front of you. Velo machshir, but not those things that would be necessary in order to help in the preparation. For Rabbi Yehuda, he says, you know, the Pasuk says, hu levado yeyoseh lochem, right? So what does lochem mean to you, for you? He says, lochem, he says, means for you, lechol tzorcheichem, whatever you need in order to eat food. This is permitted unto you, okay? Ve'idoch, so getting back to the Tanakama, so nami hoksiv, who, right? Okay, so let's see, did I skip something? Yeah, nami hoksiv lochem, right, because that makes sense, right? And the Tanakama, so what does he do with the word lochem? So he gives a different interpretation. He says, lochem below life de kechovim. Lochem below the clothing. He says, you know what lochem means? Means that you're allowed to cook food only for yourselves, but not for goyim, or not for the dogs. Not allowed to do it. Okay. The idoch. And how about Rabbi Yehuda? He says, Nami hoksiv hu, doesn't say who, so what does he do with the word who? So he says, hoksiv, right? So he says, who? Uksiv lochem. Okay, it's written who, and it's written lochem, right? So he says, kan, b'mashir shev shalasei samir of yomtav. Okay, those things that you could prepare before yomtav, you should prepare before yomtav, okay? But kan, b'mashir shev shalasei samir of yomtav. But there are things that you can't prepare until the very last minute on yomtav, so that would be permitted. In other words, try takya to prepare everything that you can in advance, okay? But whatever you can prepare in advance, it has to be, you know, you have to prepare it, you have to cook it, whatever you have to do with it, that you're permitted to do on Yom Tov itself. So that's the conclusion over there. And as I say, we follow Rabbi Yehuda's opinion over here. Yes.
In question of food preparation, if it's the two-day Yom Tov,
right.
Are you permitted to, on Yom Tov, you're supposed to only prepare for the one day that you're going to
Okay, you ask an excellent question, okay? You ask an excellent question, and so let's clarify what is the din about this, okay? In reality, on Yom Tov itself, you can only prepare food for that day itself. You're not allowed to prepare food for the second day, okay? So the question is, so when do you prepare the food for the second day? So, one possibility is, of course, that when the second day comes, then you are permitted to prepare. In other words, as soon as it's dark, at the conclusion of the first night, when the first full day is over and becomes night again, so in that particular case, at that point you can begin cooking for the second day. That's possibility number one. Very good. But you know, possibility number two is what we said over here. Do what you can before Yom Tov, prepare as much as you can, and then it's only a question of reheating or something like that, and so on, which does not impose, you know, a great burden.
What if you prepare for the first day but you have leftovers, aren't you? Aren't
you are permitted to eat it.
Yeah, leftovers
may be eaten. Right.
So if you accidentally prepare enough for two meals.
If you accidentally prepare enough for two meals on the first day, but without the intention that you're doing it for the second day, only that you had hoped that somebody would show up, that you would share a meal with or something like that,
so
and then the person
sure
didn't show up. Right, it has to be exactly. You have to know, you know, what they have in your heart when you're doing it, okay? So that's why you prepare. Now, of course, that brings us to one more problem. That's the problem that's discussed in the Maseches Beitzah. Namely, what do you do when Shabbos follows Yom Tov immediately? Okay? So what do you do then?
Make a prayer.
So what do you call it?
Erev Tavshilin.
You call it an Erev Tavshilin. And what is the Erev Tavshilin? What you're doing is that before Yom Tov actually begins, that's what you have to make it, not on Yom Tov, but before Yom Tov begins, and in that particular case, you take a piece, you take a challah or a roll, or you take a piece of matzah or something, you know, that would normally be, you know, eaten as a food, plus some cooked food. It could be a hard-boiled egg, right? Could be whatever, I mean, that you've cooked. And this has to be eaten on Shabbos. You put it aside and keep it until Shabbos, it must be not Shabbos, okay? So that thereby you are signifying the fact that you began your preparations for Shabbos before Yontif actually began. So that's why I say again, whatever you can prepare before Yontif, by all means try to do so. If you can't, then we have these other rulings that permit cooking on Yontif itself according to what it is, okay?
So you can't, like, let's say, bake a cake on the first day of Yontif, have a slice on the first day, and then save the rest of the second day?
Yes, you could, because you've already eaten from it on the first day.
The intention.
So that's leftovers.
You have the intention, you want to make a cake for the second day night.
Yeah.
So, but you can't bake the cake for the second day night, so you have a slice on the first day.
Yeah.
You can do that?
Take a generous slice.
it becomes
a large leftover.
That's the steak is one slice. A few more slices.
Okay. Alright, the next Ein Bein. Okay. Ein Bein Shabbos L'Yom HaKippurim Elo Shezez Doine V'Dei Odom Bezez Doine V'Koriz. Okay. Now, before I explain this particular Mishnah, you have to realize that, if you remember, the Torah mentions different types of punishment for violations of the Torah, okay? Naturally, if a person is guilty of murder, right, then he's liable to the death penalty. Okay, we understand. But as we know, there are actually arba misos, right? There are four different types of execution, and each one is for a different thing. I mean, one may be for adultery, another one may be for something else, you know, for murder, another one may be whatever it may be, okay. Don't like to go into them, but if you are interested, that's when you have to study Maseches Sanhedrin, you see, which deals with crimes, capital punishment, and so on. Okay. Now, at any rate, one of the things connected with where we find the rules concerning Shabbos is that Mechaleleha Mois Yumas, okay? That a person who profanes the Shabbos is to be put to death. Now, of course, our sages come along and, you know, they have all kinds of restrictions upon that. First of all, a person has to be warned that he's doing wrong, okay? Then he has to say, I don't give a damn, I'm still going to go ahead and I'm going to do it in spite of it, and he does it, you know, in the presence of witnesses and so on. So then, of course, he can be sentenced to death. Needless to say, this is something that we try to avoid as much as possible, okay? We don't want it to happen, because as the Gemara says in Marcus, if you may remember, we studied it several years ago when we learned Marcus, that a Sanhedrin or a Beis Din, the language over there, where which condemn a person to death once in 7 years is called a bunch of murderers. Rabbi Akiva comes along and he says, if it happened once in 70 years, it's a murderer. Once in 70 years, they can then survive to death. So, and then along comes another authority who says, you know, if it were up to me, I would get everybody freed, because you know, it doesn't mean freed, you know, to run around and murder anymore or anything like that, but, you know, the idea being, you know, that you know, they really did not want to enforce the death penalty. All right.
The minimum was fixed.
Right.
No unanimous decision.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I'm not going into all the various dinim, you know. For that, we have to learn the Gemara Sanhedrin, or find out, you know, what is the procedure in capital cases versus, you know, what is the procedure in civil cases, because they're two different sets of rules and regulations that apply in those cases. Okay. Now, that's the death penalty. Okay. In the Torah, we have other types of penalties which are mentioned, okay? I'll mention only two of them. One of them is what we call kores. What is kores? Kores means literally, well, it's based on the pasuk in many cases where it says that if you violate this and this, then v'nichrasa ha'nefesh ha'im Yisrael, okay? That soul literally will be cut off from the people of Israel, okay? This, we say, is something that is never can never be enforced by a human court, but it's only enforced by whom? By the heavenly court. They are the ones who would inflict the punishment of Kores, okay? Alright, so you bear that in mind, okay? Then, of course, in the Gemara Makkos, we learned that for other infringements, you know, there is the possibility that they're going to get Makkos. In other words, that, you know, you'll be beaten, you know, as a punishment for it, okay? Alright, so these are just a few of the various punishments that we have. Alright, now, this Mishnah tells us that Ein Bein Shabbos L'Yom HaKippurim, that from the point of view of what is the penalty for the desecration of Shabbos as compared to the desecration of Yom Kippur, Elo Shezez Doine B'Day Adam, difference is that if you desecrate Shabbos deliberately, this is what Zodo means, deliberately, not accidentally, but deliberately, okay? Because people make mistakes, you know, you do things and you don't realize that you're doing something wrong, all right? Or afterwards you did it, oh, wait, what did I do? And so, you know. So, if a person does it deliberately, then he can be sentenced to a punishment by whom? By a court, a human court, be it a yodam. But if a person, you know, desecrates Yom Kippur, so that is punished by Koris. In other words, no human court is going to enforce this violation of Yom Kippur, but the heavenly court will do it. Okay. So, then the Gemara continues and says, Holy inland tashlumim zevezeh shavim. Alright, so first we say there's a distinction. Now, in what way are they alike? So the answer is they are alike if at the time that you violated Shabbos or you violated Yom Kippur, you also did at the same time something which, let's say, would involve doing injury to somebody else, hurting his property, whatever it may be, okay? Now, if I, for example, inflict damage on another person, right? Whatever way there is, and incidentally, if you study the Gemara, Bava Kamma, well, there are all kinds of different ways in which you can hurt another person. You can do it, your animal might do it, you know, your property might do it, you dig a pit, it could hurt somebody, and so, you know, there are all kinds of things that could happen. So, what happens if you hurt another person? Then, of course, you have to pay that person for the damages that you cause. If you cause them also at the same time to be hospitalized, then in that particular case you have to pay for hospitalization as well. They didn't have insurance companies in those days, so that whenever a person hurt another person and they were brought before the Beis Din could tell you, you know, how much that person has to be, you know, how much he owes the other party for what he did, whether it's damage or medical bills, whatever it may be, and so on, and that's the way you square the business. Sylvia?
Question, whether the damage that you did to somebody else was intentional or accidental doesn't matter. Or does it?
In most cases it wouldn't, but sometimes it, you could get off. There are certain things where a person is potter, as we would say, but in other cases where he is chayev, okay? Chayev means that you are guilty, you have an obligation to repay, and potter under certain circumstances, you know, that you don't have to. So I say, there are all kinds of technicalities that are involved over here. You really have to be a great Talmud Chacham in order to understand all the ins and outs, in order to know where this ruling applies and where not. That's why all these things have to be adjudicated by a Beis Din. You had to have a court of people, you know, who knew not only what the law was, but they also had experience in business affairs and things like that, so that they would know, you know, how to assess the damage, you understand? Okay. So, let's say then that the time that you violated Shabbos or that you violated Yom Kippur, you also inflicted damage on somebody else and you have to repay that person for the damage that you did. So in that particular case, they are both alike. Both alike in what case? According to this, they are both alike in that we have a ruling in the Gemara, not over here, but, you know, in other places mentioned, where if a person is subject simultaneously to two different punishments, then in that particular case, we say kimlei b'derabba minei, which means we impose upon this person the penalty which is the more severe of the two.
The more severe.
Right, the more severe of the two. So, obviously then, if a person deserved the death penalty, and at the same time he also had to pay damages to somebody else, so as a result of this principle, the death penalty would take priority and not the other one, okay? And the same thing, according to this statement, would apply also to a person who desecrated Yom Kippur and did damage at the same time. In that, you know, he would be free if he got the punishment of Kores, right? Then in that particular case, he would be free from the tashmah, from the monetary payment that we have to make, okay? This is what it says. So they want to know, money must listen. So tell me, who is the one who came up with this ruling over here? So they say, it's Rabbi Nechudi Ben Akonahi. This is Rabbi Nechudi Ben Akonahi. The Tanya, as we have learned in Baraisa, it's written, Rabbi Nechudi Ben Akonahi says, Yom HaKippurim Ki Shabbos HaTashlami. He says that he would make Yom Kippur like Shabbos when it came to this matter of having to make monetary payments. Ma Shabbos Mischayev Ben Avshay Yopot Ben HaTashlomim, just as in case of Shabbos, he would have to pay with his life for the infraction, but he would be free from paying the monetary damages, right? So Av Yom HaKippur Mischayev Ben Avshay Yopot Ben HaTashlomim. So likewise, Yom Kippur, he would also be, you know, since, you know, there's a heavenly penalty that's involved in this particular case, and he would be potter from the monetary payments. Okay. So now, they quote now something that we learned in Makos. Okay? It says, Lan Hossam. We learned over there a Mishnah which says, Kol Chayavei Krisos Shelaku Nifturu Midei Krisosan. Those people who are punished with the penalty of Kris, of Kores, right? If they receive Malkus, then in that case, that frees them from the penalty of Kores. In other words, if a human court inflicts Malkus upon them, then in that particular case, the Rebbeinu Shalalem and his heavenly court will pardon them for what they do, then they will not receive Kores, okay? So this is what we learned in the Gemara and Markets, okay?
Both these things happen simultaneously, or the other punishment later?
Before we were saying about happen simultaneously. Here, however, we're talking about the fact that if you receive Malkus, right? If you receive Malkus, then in that particular case, even though you should have gotten Kores, but nevertheless, the Malkus will free you from the penalty of Kores, okay? That was the primary one. They would have been punished with Kores. But
they
should have gotten Kores. But when the court punished them by giving them Malkus, so that freed them right from the penalty of Kores, okay? Shenema, how do we know that? So he derives it from the pasuk which is written in connection with Malkus, where it says, "V'nikla ochicha li'inecha." Literally, it means, "And we want to avoid the fact that your brother should become literally cheapened, in other words, disgraced in your eyes." So, Kevin Shalapa, the minute that he received Malkus, then Hare Huk Yochicha. Then in that particular case, he now becomes once more what? Your brother. Okay? In other words, once he has received his punishment, then consider him again as your brother. Okay? And this is Divrei Rabbi Hananya ben Gamliel. Okay? And these are the words of Rabbi Hananya ben Gamliel. Omer Rabbi Yochanan. So Rabbi Yochanan said, Chalukan alav chaveirov al Rabbi Hananya ben Gamliel. He says, not everybody was in agreement that they were colleagues who disagreed with Rabbi Hananya ben Gamliel. Okay? Omar Rava. So So Rava said, Amri Beirav Tanina. Now, he quotes a similar statement about Yom Kippur. He says, they say in the house of Amri Beirav, in the house of Rav, in other words, Rav was the great Amora in Babylonia. He says, Tanina, there we have learned, Ein Ben Yom HaKippur and the Shabbos. We have learned that there's no difference between Yom Kippur and Shabbos. Elosh says, Doin be the Yodom, he says, Doin be the Hikores. The same thing that we had before. Namely, that if you deliberately violate Shabbos, then your punishment will come through a human court. Whereas if you deliberately violate Yom Kippur, then you will receive Kores from the heavenly court. Vim Esau, Idi be de Yodom. Now, if you say that both of them are inflicted by a human court, then it's bidei odom he in that particular case. In other words, right. So it says, if a human court did what? Instead of saying the Rabbeinu Shalom is going to punish this person with Kores, but instead what did they do? They give him Malkus. So in that particular case, so he says, well, that's the case, then both, whatever should have happened on Shabbos, or the punishment for violation of Shabbos, the punishment for the violation of Kippur, it's still being decided in both cases by what? By a human court. So Rav Nachman said, Homani, so tell me, so who is the author of the statement? Rabbi Yitzchak. So Rabbi Yitzchak, the Omar, Malkus Bechaivik Krisus Rekha, who says that in the case of people who deserve Kores, then there is no Malkus to be inflicted upon them. The Tanya, as we have learned, Rabbi Yitzchak Omer, Rabbi Yitzchak says, Chaivik Krisus Bechlal Hoyu, people who are deserving of Kores, they were actually originally included in those who should have received Malkus, right? The Lama Yotzos. So why do we find again an exception? Lama Yotzos Kores Bachosa. So the question is, if we take a look at the passages in Sefer Vayikra where Kores is mentioned for violation of chastity laws, sexual relations, with the father, with the mother, or something like that, Okay. So one of them all along comes along and they say, so why did they mention them again in the case of Achoso, his sister? So he says, the Dunam the Kores. So their answer is to say that the punishment for that is Kores for Leiber Malkus and not Malkus. Okay, so this is the statement of Rabbi Yitzchak that people who deserve Kores should not get Malkus. Now, if they don't get Malkus, it means what? It means that they'll get the heavenly punishment. So that's why. Okay? So, in other words, what do the Chachomim say? Chachomim say, those who disagree with him, if he would get Malkus, then he would be free from Kores. Okay. Rav Ashi Omar, Afila Temo, you might even argue, Rabbonon, Zeikas Doine Bnei Adam, Zeikas Doine Bnei Kores. You might say, okay, it's up to the rabbis, but in the final analysis, we say, in one case, the deliberate violation is punished by a human court, essentially, and the other one, essentially, is punished by Kores, by the heavenly court. Okay. So, I think I'm going to stop at this point, and because we have first completed Daf Zion Omid Beis, and we'll be ready next week. Okay. Tonight is... Don't ask 29. Me. It's the 29th. Okay. It's the 29th of August in the year 2001, and we are about to begin Daf Ches in Maseches Megillah. Okay. I already warned some people before we started the shiur tonight that we're dealing tonight in a very difficult area. Very difficult. Now, why is this difficult? Well, until now, Okay, let me just say a word, you know, what we studied the last week, okay? Last week, we had two cases of Ein Bein, but of course it started at the original Ein Bein that we had a couple of pages before. The original one is what? That, you know, there's no difference between Adar Rishon and Adar Sheni, except the, as far as the meaning of the Megillah is concerned, the Matan and Sof Yudim. Okay? That's what the Mishnah said. So, from that, we learned all kinds of laws concerning when do we celebrate Purim, but we see that in the Nibiyor, in other words, in a leap year, so then it is observed in second Adar, even though there is a minority opinion where they quote where, you know, he said that it should be in the first Adar, not in second Adar, okay? But if it had been observed in first Adar, then in that particular case, we say, all right, as far as reading the Megillah is concerned, and the Matan Sof Yudim must definitely be repeated again in second Adar. And the difference was, I mean, do we say, you know, that we go according to the normal situation where what? Where Adar follows Shabbat, and therefore that would mean first Adar? Or do we go according to the accepted opinion, which we is, you know, a mismach geula legeula. In other words, that we should have one redemption followed by another redemption. The redemption of Purim, in other words, should be followed by the redemption of Pesach, and therefore it should be in second Adar. Okay, so we resolved that more or less, okay? Then followed another series of Ein Beins. This is what we had on Zion Omid Beins. The first one dealt with the fact that there is no difference between Yontif and Shabbos as far as things that we're permitted to do or not permitted to do, with one exception. And that exception, as we said, is ochel nefesh. Okay, in other words, whatever has to be, whatever is connected with food preparation, so that is permitted on the yontov, which occurs on a weekday, as compared to Shabbos. And of course, I don't have to tell you, if a yontov occurs on Shabbos, then it's the rule of Shabbos that applies, not the rule of yontov. Okay? Yeah. Okay, in that respect. Okay, so we did that. And then after that, we had this last one, namely that Ein Bein Shabbos Liyom HaKippurim. There's no difference in the violations between Shabbos and Yom Kippur, except as far as punishment is concerned, where we discussed about the fact that the deliberate violation of Shabbos, of course, remember, it's subject to all kinds of rules concerning warning by witnesses and saying, I don't give a damn, I'm going to do what I want to do, and things like that, and so on. I mean, and then it has to be brought before a court, and in the court, they'll try to look for what? They'll try to look for justification for whatever took place. You know, they see if they can justify the person who committed the Aveda and the things like that, and so on. In other words, they have to be, as we would say, mahabik b'skusay. They have to look for skus, they have to look for merit to see if they can free somebody from the penalty of death, okay? But theoretically, okay, theoretically there's a death penalty in the books for the deliberate violation of Shabbos, okay? Death penalty, right. Whereas, when it comes to Yom Kippur, what is the violation that, I mean, what is the punishment that the Torah mentions? The answer is it's chorus, okay. So, that was the Ein Bein. Now we continue in a series of Ein Beins, and here we deal in Yodim, subject matter, in plain English, right, which a little bit difficult for us. The first is not that hard, but after that, it gets very tough. Why? Because we're dealing, for example, with such a thing as gonorrhea.
As what?
We'll be dealing with gonorrhea. Person who suffers from gonorrhea, and obviously it's something that is not applicable today, because I'll explain to you why when we get to that particular mission. Okay.
Was the disease known
by what they call Zov and Zova, okay,
and
or Ziva, right?
What they mean.
We assume that's what they mean. Okay, we assume. I'll go into it when we get to it. We didn't get there yet. First, we have something that's a little bit easier yet before we get to it. Okay.
One step at a time.
Yes.
The baby. Okay. The baby should be able to not plague us with these things. Okay.
All right. The first Mishnah on the top of Daf Ches. Everybody sees it?
Okay. Yeah.
It says, Ein bein hamudor hanoa bechaviro, the mudor b'menu ma'achol, eladrisas haregel, v'kelim she'nesim behem oichon nefesh. Okay. At first sight, it may seem easy. Okay? So I'm trying not to complicate matters. But we are talking over here about mudor hanoa. Okay. We have in the Torah, at the very beginning of Parsha Matos, okay, read it not too many weeks ago, maybe about 6-7 weeks ago, we read it, okay? You know, Matos and Masa usually are combined together in the reading, and, you know, it's always the last week in which you read the Sefer Bamidbar, okay? So, in Parsha Matos, the very first chapter that we find over there deals with Nidorim. What are Nidorim? Nidorim are vows. Okay. However, I have to specify at this moment that the Nidorim that we're talking about in that chapter are different from the Nidorim which we came across when we studied Maseches Rosh Hashanah. Okay? Why are they different? Because in one case, the Nidorim that are covered there in Parsha Matos deal with where somebody makes a vow to abstain from something, makes a vow that he will not or she will not benefit by something or other. Okay? For example, you might make an eder that you're going to go on a diet for 30 days or something like that. Okay? Now, obviously, if you break that vow, so, you know, you're guilty of what? You're guilty of lo yachil devaro. In other words, you made a vow and you have profaned your word, so to speak, right? So, that's a simple thing. A person might say, for example, I'm not going to touch wine for 30 days, okay?
Does that constitute a vow?
That's a vow. I take a vow that, okay?
You have to say it, I take
right.
a vow.
In the Gemara and the Dorim, they have all kinds of expressions that they use over there, where if you use any of these expressions, that automatically means that the vow falls upon you, okay? So, those are the Dorim that they're discussing over there. But there are also nastier the Dorim. Also. Namely, I mean, this is not mentioned in the Bible, you know, the Torah, but the Gemara starts in to discuss it. So, we have what we call a madir and a mudar. What is a madir? A madir is a person, he says, I make a vow that I'm not going to either benefit from anything that you have, or I'll make another vow which says that you cannot benefit from anything that I have. Okay?
So you're
that is a matter, right? Right.
You're implicating somebody else in your vow.
That's correct.
You're putting
correct.
The onus on the other person, actually.
In the last case, right?
Case.
Right.
Do
in
that?
The last case, you
don't.
Well, it's a question, but obviously, it is possible. Okay.
To tie someone else into
right.
your vow.
Right. Right. I
don't,
mean, you can say, for example,
don't
right?
Make a will out.
You know, I make a vow right now that you will never inherit whatever it may be, okay. But in reality, of course, there were laws of the Torah that could supersede that, you see, and nullify the vow, okay. But I'm only giving an example. It's not a real example, but, you know, as we would say, it's a marshal so that we can understand a little bit clearer, you know, what is involved. I can make a debtor, for example, that I don't want you ever to come to my house again, okay. Unfortunately, people do that. You're aware of that, I mean, that people do take such vows. So, or I take a letter that I will never come to your house, okay? Now, this is the madir. The mudor is the person against whom
you make it,
exactly. And naturally, if you are madir, then he becomes a mudor. In other words, if I say, you cannot have any benefit from me, then it means that that person is mudor. He cannot have any benefit from the person who was the mother. You understand? Okay. So that's already, as I say, a much tougher type of a nether than the person who simply says that I'm going to give up wine for 30 days or something like that. Or I'm not going to eat grapefruit for 30 days, something like that. I mean, okay.
Does the
Nazir
come under any of these
Well, the Nazir is also, he takes a vow, but that's called a nether Nazirus. The vow that he's going to be a Nazir, he's going to be a Nazirite. Right. In which case, of course, then he's bound by the rules that apply to a Nazir, essentially not allowed to have anything to do with any product of the grape. Okay, he has to let his hair grow. Okay, and he's not allowed to come in contact with a mess. Okay, with a dead person.
And there's a term.
In Hebrew, we call it a mess.
There's a time. Isn't there a period of time?
No, Stam Nazirus is 30 days. In other words, if you say that I want to be a Nazir and you don't specify the time, then you have to observe it for 30 days. Okay.
What if that 30 days crosses Yom Kippur? Well, on Yom Kippur, you're freed of your vows. Are you not?
Not necessarily.
Not necessarily.
Not necessarily.
What vows are you talking about?
God.
That you're freed of.
What?
Yeah.